generation of feature makers brings to our ears. Thanks to all the entries, and I look forward to hearing more wonderful new storytelling in 2023. New Storytellers is a Soundscape production for BBC Radio 4.
And New Storytellers is presented by Charles Parker's daughter, Sarah Parker. You can hear all 20 of the Charles Parker Prize-winning features if you search for New Storytellers on BBC Sounds.
I'm Claudia Hammond, and I'd love to know if there's someone who's made a real difference to your mental health. If so, there's still time to enter the All in the Mind Awards. And one member of our judging panel was a finalist last time, and she's the actress Maddie Leslie, who coincidentally now plays Chelsea in The Archers.
I really think you should enter the awards because they're like an amazing thing to do, you know?
You can nominate an individual, a professional or a group. I'd love to hear your story and I'm sure they'd love to know the difference they made. You have until midnight on the 31st of January to enter. Can't wait to read what you have to say.
Now on Radio 4, it's the first 6:30 comedy of the year, and with topics including peanut butter, Westminster Abbey and Alan Shearer, must be Just a Minute.
Welcome to Just a Minute! Hello, Sue Perkins here, and as the minute waltz fades away, what a joy to welcome you to Just a Minute. Now time to introduce you to the four marvellous, talented and delightful people playing Just a Minute this week. They are Paul Merton, Desiree Birch, Tony Hawks and Jan Ravens. Please whoop and cheer for all of them. I'm going to ask them in a time-honoured fashion to speak on a subject that I give them for 60 seconds without hesitation, repetition or deviation, and we'll see how that goes. Paul, we are going to start with you. Okay. And the subject on the card is peanut butter. Can you speak for 60 seconds without hesitation, repetition or deviation on the peanut butter, please? And your time starts now.
A version of peanut butter was patented by John Kellogg, he of Kellogg's Corn Flakes fame, and this was really around about the 1890s. Peanut butter, if you look at the ingredients, is full of very good things. There's vitamins and there's a kind of sort of low-level fat, which is very good for lowering cholesterol.
Tony.
Did he say good twice?
He did.
Yes,
he did.
I did. Very good, very good.
Yeah. It is very good. It is very good. Yeah. Yeah, well, it's a great challenge, Tony. You've got 42 seconds remaining on peanut butter, and your time starts now.
Life is full of enormously difficult decisions that we have to make. The biggest, perhaps, is crunchy or smooth. What do you do? It depends on your mood. If you're feeling ebullient, perhaps you'll go for that crunchier flavour, or perhaps not, if you're a little more
Paul.
Well, it was a repetition of perhaps.
Yes, it was.
But
it was.
I'm quite happy for him to keep the subject.
Yeah. No, I'm very happy to hear what more you've got to say on that subject.
Oh, well, actually, coincidentally, I did this for A-level, so actually, I do know quite well.
OK, well, that was a correct challenge. You get the point. You also get the subject back with 22 seconds remaining, starting now.
I failed my A-level. You didn't buzz, did you, Tony?
Hopefully someone got in before me.
No. Tony, you'll be delighted to hear that you have the subject back. I'm looking forward, bearing in mind you've done crunchy and smooth, it's going to be a very, very difficult 19 seconds for you. And your time starts now.
It's very smearable. So if you take it, perhaps put it on your dog.
Paul.
Oh, I hate to say this, but it's repetition of perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm so doubtful about things. I should, instead of perhaps, say definitely smear it on your dog.
I don't think you smear it on your dog. I think that might be an RSPCA issue. I think you can give it to your dog
to
laugh as they attempt to...
Well, you know, that's between me and the RSPCA.
Also, well done, you're the first person to have said smearable on Radio 4.
It's great to have these firsts under your belt.
Paul, that's a correct challenge.
Yes,
seems like many years ago we started this topic. Still such an evergreen. 13 seconds.
13 seconds.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And it starts... Now,
I remember the RSPCA saying to me, you should never smear peanut butter onto your dog. I said, why not? They said, well, we had Tony Hawks.
Tony.
Lots of seds.
Yes, there was lots of seds, but...
Oh. Is that too small? Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Kit Paul carry on, then.
No, you have it. You pay pay the price for challenging.
Your generosity, gentlemen, is admirable, but there are rules that must be followed.
Yes, there are.
It was a correct challenge. And, Tony, I know you're going to love this. You've got the subject back again. With 4 seconds, 4 seconds, the marathon is not yet over, which is ironic because that's what marathons were made out of. One for the oldies there. You've got 4 seconds. Starting now.
I went to see Peanut Butter the...
Oh, no.
Deviation. He didn't say perhaps.
As I channel my illustrious predecessor, I enjoyed that interjection and certainly you'll get an extra point, but Tony still has the subject and miraculously only 1 second got chipped off that. We're all still here. I've had a birthday, but... 3 seconds, Tony, starting now.
Peanut Butter the Musical was magnificent. The dancing was incredible.
Tony speaking as the whistle went, gets that point. That was a battle of the titans there. Now, Jan, you're with us next, mm-hmm. and your subject is a tricky one, this one.
Mm-hmm.
Work-life balance.
Oh, right. Wow.
Yeah.
Work-life balance.
You've got 60 seconds to tell us all about it, and your time starts now.
I am a big fan of the work-life balance. I object to this world where people are expected to answer emails or reply to their messages at every single second. I remember holding a vigil for my poor dying mother and my brother having to take calls from a certain supermarket's building department at the bedside. Now, that seems to me to not show a good work-life balance. It's not very funny. It's also a little bit tasteless, possibly, for 6:30 on a whatever day it is. But any...
Oh.
Friday. Yes, it's Friday today, but Monday when people are hearing this. So, actually, I withdraw my challenge.
I was going to give you an extra point for a factually correct challenge about scheduling, but you're right, it now has to be withdrawn because it was proved to be wrong. But
that's right, yeah.
Do you have any other challenge relating to...
Not at the moment, no.
I'm going to get you to keep that subject, Anne. You've got 22 seconds. You're smashing it. You've done an inordinate amount of work. Let's see if you can complete the job with 22 seconds remaining, starting now.
Many people, when they retire, discover that their work-life balance has been very much slanted towards work, and so they find that when they retire, and this particularly applies...
Repetition of retire, indeed. All right. Oh, that's changed the temperature in the room there. And I like it a little chilly, so I'm moving on. So, you have 11 seconds on the clock, Desiree, to tell us about work-life balance, and your time starts now.
Work-life balance is a bit of a misnomer for people whose careers involve things that they are passionate about. It is difficult to have a work-life balance if you are a priest, for instance.
Desiree speaking as the whistle went, which means she gets that point. And Tony, we're with you next, my lovely. Now, your subject is an impulse purchase. I think we're all hoping that impulse purchase isn't peanut butter. We should find out. You have a minute available to you, sir, and your time starts now.
A long time ago, I purchased a deodorant called Impulse, but not without mulling it over for a few days before I went ahead and made that particular buying activity happen. Now, let me tell you, I could say purchase because it's in the title, but I chose not to. Now, an impulse purchase is something that I do occasionally get myself caught up in. I was rowing up the River Thames one day, and to my left, or as we call it in the rowing game, I've said rowing now three times.
Paul?
A self-confessed repetition.
Yeah. Yep, you got him there. So you've got 26 seconds remaining to tell us about an impulse purchase starting now.
As I wandered around the British Museum's gift shop, I saw this giant sarcophagus and I thought to myself, that'd look lovely in the back garden. So I went up to the assistant behind the counter and I said, how much are you charging for your sarcophaguses? And they said, well, that one there, we can sell it to you for approximately £85. I thought, that's outrageous. I'm not paying that amount of money. I've come all the way from Great Portland Street to do this. I don't have to listen to this rubbish. And so they said to me, go!
Speaking of the whistle went, gains you the extra point. Congratulations there, Paul. And now we are with you, Desiree. Your subject is the historic church and tourist attraction Westminster Abbey.
Okay.
So you... 60 seconds to tell us all about that. We are on tenterhooks. Your time starts now.
Many of us got a nice long look at Westminster Abbey on the television recently as we watched the president of my country sneak into church late as though he wasn't going to get caught going to the Queen's funeral a bit tardily.
Oh, I wanted to hear the rest of that. We might well get the opportunity yet. Tony, you challenged.
There was a slight hesitation.
There was a little.
Larger than slight.
There was a little.
A lady always likes to be a little slight.
There was a little dalliance with hesitation. Correct challenge, Tony. You get the point and you get 43 seconds to tell us all about Westminster Abbey, starting now.
I once used to go out with a girl called Abby who came from the Westminster area. And I used to call her Abigail Thompson, because that was her name. Now, Westminster Abbey is a great big church. Not a lot of people know this, so I thought it was important to clear it up here and now. A couple of towers, one each side as you go in. Then as you walk up, there's pews on the left and the right, and you can sit down, worship, sing hymns, that kind of stuff. Anything else you need to know? I've got a website called
But for Tim Berners-Lee, that would be the most delightful moment. Dang you, the internet, responsible for so much pain and grief. Paul, your challenge.
Yes, so, unfortunately, a repetition of W, which was a shame.
Yeah, correct.
Believe it or not, I was going to say it three times.
a good steal, Paul. 7 seconds remaining. Westminster Abbey, what can you tell us about that venerable old pile of bricks starting now?
As I burrowed my way out of Brixton Prison, I suddenly found myself in the depths of Westminster Abbey. I looked around and there was a sarcophagus.
Well, that's the end of our opening round. And with that, a few scores. We have Jan in fourth place, just behind Desiree, just behind Tony, with Paul inching just a little bit ahead. And Paul, we are back with you again and the terrible twos. Can you speak? It's really tickled one person in the audience.
Yes.
That's how this show rolls. One by one by one we get you. 60 seconds without hesitating, repeating or debating on the terrible twos, please. Your time starts now.
Our school football team had a terrible job trying to find somebody who could play right back. No matter who we put in that position, they were always awful. There was Tom, Bob, Sid, Danny, Robert, William. None of them could really understand the defensive qualities that were needed to play in that particular part of the football team. I've simply pointed football, I think.
Repetition of football.
Yes.
Paul knew it.
I knew it.
But you're right, a correct challenge, Tony. You get the subject, which is the terrible twos. 37 seconds remaining, starting now.
Toddlers, as we desire.
He's clearly drunk.
It's hard to know what that was, Paul, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. It was a sort of like a new language evolving in front of us. I suppose we could call it deviation.
Yes.
Or hesitation.
Hesitation.
And also repetition of...
I was doing an impression of a toddler.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to give the subject to you, Paul. 33 seconds remaining off that correct challenge. The terrible twos starting now.
One theory as to why two-year-olds do have the ability to throw tantrums is because they don't really have a full control of their vocal vocabulary. So they're trying to tell you something, but the words won't come to them, so they get very angry. Now, there are various tips of how to deal with a toddler who is having this trouble trying to get across its message to you. First of all, you mustn't punish them in any way. You must sit them down and say, look, if you make that noise again, you're going out the window. And they understand this intrinsically, that there would be a bad thing to do to carry on in this tempestuous way.
Paul speaking as the whistle went, gets that point. And Jan, we're back with you.
Yes.
Oh, this is a wonderful one.
Yes.
All's well that ends well.
Oh,
lovely subject.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's nice.
That's good.
Very nice. You've got 60 seconds to tell us everything you know about All's Well That Ends Well. And your time starts now.
All's Well That Ends Well is by William Shakespeare, a playwright who wrote it in the 17th century or possibly 16th. And it is known as a problem play because it is not quite certain whether it's a comedy or a tragedy, and it has certain ethical dilemmas. The heroine, Helena, is in love with a bloke called Bertram, which doesn't sound very attractive, but nonetheless, she's obsessed. And she goes after him and tries to get him. He doesn't want to know. His mum is the Countess of Rossillon.
Ooh, Tony.
I was going to say, it's not a comedy. We clear that one up.
Yeah, it's a problem play. Yeah. It's a problem. Yeah.
She didn't actually do anything wrong. I just buzzed in to try and get a laugh, which I just about got. So I would like to apologise.
Well, you can withdraw your challenge. We're back with you. You've got 18 seconds on the clock, Jan, and your time telling us about All's Well That Ends Well starts now.
The leading female character comes up with a trick to trap the hero, and she puts herself in a bed where a woman he loved was supposed to be, and thus she makes the marriage consummate.
That's how I believe English literature should be taught. A perfect delivery of the narrative of the play. Congrats, Jan. You get the point there because you were speaking as the whistle went. And Tony, we're with you now. What we've got for you. We've got false starts. False starts. I'm sure you've never had one of those. False starts. Let's hear about it. 60 seconds. Your time starts now.
The British government is doing a terrific job. There is an example of a start that is false. Or a false start, if you prefer to call it that. It's mainly known in athletics where runners...
Well, there was a slight hesitation there.
There was a slight hesitation, and normally I would let it go, but Tony is a very experienced player of the game, and he's been quite pugnacious in his own challenges. So we'll let you have that one, Paul. I suspect the ping pong will start again between the two of you.
Yes, it's all got very pugnacious.
So you have the topic. 44 seconds, please, Paul, and false start starting now.
False start is a character in Shakespeare's play. He's a great fat bloke. And he's a friend of the king. And essentially he's got all these marvellous speeches about, fellow well met and all this sort of stuff. And he drinks a lot of wine and tankards and beer and all that kind of stuff. And
John,
didn't you say all kinds of stuff twice?
No. It's got nothing to do with you, what do you mean? Very
it
idea.
Wasn't correct. There was some repetition there sadly.
Was.
But I was, to be honest, marvelling at the Falstaff jokes. Yeah. 31 seconds remaining for you, Jan, with that correct challenge on false start starting now.
A false start is something that
I was just illustrating the point.
Yeah. Well, you've done that admirably to the point where Paul's interruption, which I presume is for...
Hesitation.
Yes, is correct. And 28 seconds on a false start, starting now.
As I stood on the starting line, I looked at the other three runners next to me and I thought, I want to win this race. The whistle went, followed by a gun and a cannon. That was our start to make the great big challenge in front of us something that we could clutch to our bosom. And as I paced myself forward, yard by 3 feet, I could see the spectators. Why were us then?
Tony.
Well, if he keeps running like that, then there hasn't been a false start.
I was about to say... about a false start. You stopped me.
I feel that it's time to give Tony the benefit of the doubt.
How many seconds has he got then?
Oh, he's got seven, which
seven
is not
seconds, you see.
The benefit of the doubt will inevitably be cast upon all of our panellists during the course of this show. But it falls upon Tony right now with 7 seconds remaining to tell us about false starts. Your time starts now.
It's 2010. Everyone is expecting Usain Bolt to win...